You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
It's hour one on this Thursday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. We got the U.S. Open underway. Basketball tonight, football tonight. Bengals and the Browns. Heat Celtics game two. The Lakers and the Nuggets get underway tomorrow night. Welcome. Stay a while if you can. You can watch on Peacock. It's free. Download the app and join us. And you can also listen on our great radio affiliates around the country, numbering 362, including that very powerful Fox Sports Radio lineup. Coming up, Pat Forte from Sports Illustrated with an update here on what's going to happen in the Pac-12. And you have some other conferences are revisiting playing football. The Mountain West is pushing for a fall football schedule. And the Pac-12 is on the clock right now. And you had the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, who said, look, nobody's holding up Pac-12. There's no rules with you not being able to play football here. So we reached out to the commissioner, Larry Scott. We'll see if he can fit us in to his schedule today and talk to him about the possibility of the Pac-12 playing football. But the Big Ten is back, and it's been a wild month for the conference. But yesterday, they announced the football season will begin the weekend of October 23rd, 24th. And in a way, the Big Ten's journey reflects some of the things that have been going on all around the country. The powers that be had to weigh safety versus revenue and figure out how to do it. The whole time while balancing a number of different agendas here, and there were quite a few agendas here, the Big Ten schools all over the country in states with different situations and different politics. I know that it came out that this was a unanimous vote. All the presidents in the Big Ten wanted to play. That is not the case. I'm being told that that was not the case. Now, not that it matters, but for Rutgers, Northwestern, maybe one or two other schools, they're kind of going kicking and screaming here. But they are trying to make this work. They're going to play 9 consecutive weeks. And if it does work, maybe you see Ohio State, maybe Wisconsin, maybe Penn State in the Final Four. Heck, maybe it's Michigan's year. But we all have to re-educate ourselves on these teams to see who's going to be good, who's going to be great, who opted out. If it all works, we get to find out really soon. But the Big Ten is back. Now, I go back to August when the commissioner of the Big Ten, Kevin Warren, was lecturing us on they're not going to revisit this after they decided that they were not playing football in the Big Ten. In fact, let me give you the exact quote that he had. August 19th letter published in the Big Ten's website. The commissioner of the Big Ten said the vote to postpone fall sports would not be revisited. And it was another instance in which the Big Ten backed itself into a corner. And then August 6th, the conference released its revised 10-game schedule, and it was supposed to happen on September 5th. So where we are now, I think they're just holding their breath. But from what I was told, this is a $700 million decision on behalf of the Big Ten. The commissioner is going to tell you it's all about the kids. This is about $700 million. Here is the commissioner talking about the kids.
This really is a special day for the Big Ten Conference. This is all about our student athletes. And the only focus and goal that we've had over the last 40 days was to safely allow our student athletes to return to competition so they can fulfill their dreams.
Okay. It's all about the kids. They're not student athletes, Commissioner. They're athletes. What they're going through, what they're going to go through, they're athletes here. But the Big Ten commissioner, who we've reached out to try to get on the show for, I don't know, 2 months now, maybe longer, maybe he'll join us at some point so we can talk about what did change. Is it rapid testing? Because that seems to be sort of the catchphrase here. Hey, rapid testing. That's the reason why we're coming back. Okay. If that's what changed and that's going to, you know, help us have a football season, great. But I'm a little skeptical that it's just rapid testing here. I think the pressure from inside was enormous. And you had other people, you had parents of players, you had players, marquee players, you had ADs, you had coaches, and everybody's looking around going, they're playing high school football in some of these states. You have the SEC, ACC, Big 12 playing. Why aren't we playing? And I think they ran out of good answers there. And now the Pac-12, I truly believe in the next 2 days, by Friday afternoon, maybe Friday night, we're going to find out, Can the Pac-12 pull this off? And I'm trying to find this out. I'll let you in on whatever I'm privy to when it comes to the Pac-12. But if the Mountain West is playing and everybody else, it feels, I don't know if the Mid-American Conference can pull this off. Because I was told, keep in mind the amount of money that you're going to spend. Not everybody has that amount of money. Not that kind of revenue in their athletic departments. But the Big Ten, Pac-12, ACC, SEC, Big 12, they have that money. And the Mid-American Conference and some of these other conferences don't. Mountain West, I don't know how they'll pull it off. But, hey, look, I applaud that you're at least trying. That's all I ask for when it came to the Big Ten and Pac-12. But it felt like they just basically closed up shop, and it didn't feel like that they were going to give it any kind of great effort there. That was my only disappointment in all of this. But Big Ten is back. I don't know what it's going to look like. There are players who opted out. Don't know if they're allowed to come back, but I'll leave that to the powers that be. This program brought to you by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com today to take care of the things you need to get done without having to leave your home. That's LegalZoom.com. Football coming up tonight. The Cleveland Browns are 6-point favorites against the Bengals. The headline tomorrow, if the Browns don't win, is going to be the lead headline. It'll be a big, big headline. That's national TV. You got your in-state rival. You got the number one pick, Joe Burrow, going against Baker Mayfield. Odell Beckham, how many touches does he get tonight? If they go 0-2, and I know that we overrated the Browns last year. I didn't. This year, I might be overrating them. You got a new head coach in Kevin Stefanski, and you still have some chemistry issues that between Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr., trying to get them on the same page. Odell says, get me involved early. I said that yesterday, just a bubble screen, something, just to keep him happy. And I don't, it feels like they're going to have bigger problems than just Baker Mayfield getting the ball to Odell Beckham. I would be a run first team. I'd run first, I'd run second, and I might run third too, because you brought in Conklin. You got two really good running backs here. These are Pro Bowl running backs that you have there, and I would be utilizing them. I don't need to have, you know, I'd almost look at Baker Mayfield the way Seattle uses Russell Wilson, and that is, let's be a running team, and then when we need something, then maybe we go to a passing offense here. We have the weapons. Trust me, those receivers will be a whole lot more wide open if you establish the run, and that might help Baker Mayfield here. It's only one game. I know we love to have a referendum. We go, oh, the Browns are terrible. The Jets are terrible. The Eagles are going to be terrible. Oh, Jacksonville's going to be better than what we think. Oh, Washington's going to be better than what we think. Are the Colts any good? That was our reaction. Aaron Rodgers could be MVP. Tom Brady, I knew it wasn't going to go well. Oh, when does Miami go to Tua? Dallas, I don't know. Do you extend Dak Prescott? These are all the things that we, storylines that we had from week one. But if the Browns don't win tonight, it's not a must win, but it's getting close there for that team. It just feels like there's some fragility there. And I don't know who their leader is. I think that's the big question. I don't know who their leader is. Is Baker Mayfield respected? Is Odell Beckham listening to him? Jarvis Landry. I mean, you got talent there. You got a lot of talent. Yes, McLovin.
I agree with what Seton said before the show. We are burying the Browns way too soon. They went against a team on fire. The Ravens were running around like the 2014 Seahawks in week one. It was in Baltimore, and now they host on a short week the worst team in football from last year.
You're either going to be completely right or completely wrong tomorrow, McLovin, because if the Browns don't win tonight, then what they did against Baltimore was meaningless.
Right, but we could say that with anything. If the Bucs get blown out, we could say Tom Brady stinks, but that's a hypothetical headline that, you know, this is hypothetical that the Browns are going to lose.
Yeah, and I said, let's judge them. That's why when, hey, are they going to trade Odell Beckham? I go, how about we wait a couple of games here? How about we showcase Odell Beckham? Let's see what you have there with this new offense, new coach. I can't blame this on, you know, Fredo Kitchens here. Yes, Seton.
Right, but when was the last time that the like a Browns-Bengals game was just so delicious?
It's been a long time. Now, growing up in Ohio, it was always a big game, even though the teams weren't very good. But now this has national significance here. This has national significance.
Tasty.
Yes, it is. Yes, McLovin.
Yeah, by the way, don't worry. Johnny Manziel made his debut against the Bengals. We're all excited about the Browns. But I have bad news for you about your Ravens pick, though.
Why?
They're the most popular. Oh, the Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl. I didn't pick them preseason, but I'm picking them after week one. Now everybody picks them after week one.
You can't change your Super Bowl pick after 1 week.
But as you said, everyone overreacts to everything. I've heard so much Ravens hype this week. I didn't hear it the week before, except I heard a little, but
I thought that they were a better team than Kansas City last year. And Kansas City had moments where they weren't going to advance in the playoffs. We had Patrick Mahomes. We thought his knee was dislocated and probably out for the season. But they stepped up when they needed to, and Baltimore did not. So the question is going to be with Baltimore, pretty much the way it is with the Dodgers. Got to win. You can be great during the regular season. Dodgers clinched last night. But the Ravens are going to have to produce in the postseason. Yeah, Paulie.
I think going into last year's playoffs, the Ravens were favored at Vegas-wise ahead of the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs were 12-4 and the Ravens were 14-2.
Yeah.
It's nothing about the regular season. Everyone loves the Ravens.
Yeah. It's just you got to, you know, that's what I'm waiting for. Got people jumping on the Steelers bandwagon, by the way. Remember when I said that's the one team I'm the most fascinated with going into the regular season was Pittsburgh. And your guys' jaws drop. You're like, Pittsburgh? And I'm like, yeah, because Ben is fascinating to me. Is he? If Ben can play at a high level, then that team is going to be a playoff team and a dangerous team. That defense is really good. And Ben said he felt like he had been in a train wreck or a car wreck, I think, after game one. No surprise there that Ben let us in on all the pain that he's suffering.
Roethlisberger talking about his injury?
No, I'm good. I never felt better.
He talks about his pain more than I have. And that's saying a lot. Hey, let me tell you about my condition here. Yeah, Paul.
You know how you run into people in the hallway and you do the little platitude? Hey, how you doing? When you do it to Ben, he goes, the elbow's really acting up.
And I'm glad you asked.
The back is. Thanks for asking. Let me show you this x-ray right here because it's not working out.
And nobody really wants to hear what's wrong with you when you say, hey, how you doing? You're just going, okay. Like, I'm already walking by you. You know, you don't want to say, I got a couple hours to live. All right, I'll see you later. Yeah, I'm going to go get some lunch here. Yes, Todd.
So you can't say, well, actually, I got this fatty liver, and I got to go back. I got to take this medication. No one wants.
All right, McLovin, what kind of poll question do you have?
By the way, can I just say, you're right, the Steelers' hype is out of control. They shut down the Giants, and all of a sudden, the steel curtain is back. What is going on?
Oh, I saw where Tiki Barber, former Giants running back, borderline Hall of Famer, he said maybe Saquon Barkley is not what we thought he was. They can't pass block.
All right, who did we bury too soon? The Browns, the Jets, who are beyond buried, the Colts, or the Philadelphia Eagles? And I didn't put the Cowboys or the 49ers on there because they played tough teams.
We're burying the Colts too soon if somebody is burying the Colts.
I mean, I think people are.
Well, they shouldn't. The Eagles, I don't know what's going to happen with that. It feels like it's going to be win two, lose two. You know, win three, lose two. I don't know. It just feels like they're going to be. It's a tug of war with winning and losing in Philadelphia. The Jets are not. They're not good, but they're going to win enough to ruin their draft pick. And the Browns, I have them as a playoff team. So I'm not going to bury them. But if they lose to the Bengals, you know, I root for a story. I usually don't root for a player or a team. When I started doing this full-time at ESPN, I said I would not openly root for a team, whether it was the Cincinnati Reds in the World Series against the Oakland A's. And as much as I wanted them to win, I have to be unbiased here. And if a Bengal fan or Ohio State football, Notre Dame football, I root for stories. And Cleveland losing tonight would be a good story. I'm just trying to get through 3 hours of a radio show, folks, just so you know. Yes, Eden.
Right, like, it would be a lot of fun for the show tomorrow if they lose.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I want the Browns to be good. I think it'd be a lot more fun if they are a playoff team.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that. Do you want the Browns to be good or bad? Because they got to be either really good or really bad.
Because you have too many personalities on that team, and like way too much star power and just interesting people for them to stink. You know, like I don't know. Yeah, is it fun to be like, oh, look at Baker Mayfield's commercials running during the playoffs? That's awkward. Be like, all right, we already did that. You know, and it's
not
that much fun.
I would have told Baker, let's ease up on the commercials this season. And then first weekend, there's a Hulu commercial there, and it's on so often. I go, no. You just got to back away from the buffet. Yes, Fritzy.
I think it'd be fun to see Mayfield and the Browns improve, but for tonight, after kind of getting screwed out of a chance to have an overtime victory with that last-second missed field goal by the Bengals, it would be nice to see Joe Burrow win one tonight, not getting that opportunity in week one.
So you want both, Todd?
There's still 14 other games, though, after week two. Unless we believe the stats, if you're 0-2, you have almost no chance of making the playoffs.
So what are you rooting for?
Tonight, I would like to see Joe Burrow, because I was hoping he would have gotten a chance to pull it out in overtime. Since he didn't, tonight, I would like to see the Bengals win. But after that, I'd like to see Cleveland improve over the next 14 games.
Cleveland to go 14-2?
No, because then Denver would have even less of a chance of even getting into a wild card of playoffs.
Nobody cares about
that. But for me personally, I don't want the Browns to be too good.
Thank you, Todd. So Bengals Browns tonight, Heat Celtics, that'll be game two. Pat Forty will join us.
So basically I want the Browns to be great, but not too good, and I want them to lose this game tonight.
Yeah,
if
no,
that,
I got
that clears
you.
It up.
No, I got you.
So they should lose and be great, but not that good.
I got you. You got a rally today, because the last couple of days have been a little
kind of all over the place.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a little bit. Yeah, Paul.
I thought he crushed it. No. The bit yesterday, the Monday Night Football humming, kind of crushed it.
All right, go ahead, Todd.
There were some mixed reviews, though, on social media.
Really?
That. There was a couple that said, hilarious, Radio Gold, and another, that's why I don't listen to this show.
Wait.
Shut that guy up. He's not funny. He'll never be funny. No one cares how we've got a singing voice or what sports themes he can do.
Wow.
Well, that you get some of that. I think it was primarily positive, but I don't look at the positive ones. Of course, I'm Mr. Sensitive. I'm like, what do you mean you'll never listen to the show before when I open my mouth?
So you're the reason why he doesn't listen to the show?
There was at least, I'd say at least two, probably more, but then I just stopped because I got upset. It's like, shut his mic off. No one wants to hear from him. Well, he's ruining your show.
Why don't you, no. I ruined the show. You didn't.
Well, you ruined the show by putting us on it.
Okay. But I did ruin it.
That decision was made a decade ago. I
blame myself there. I'm going to have to lower. If you're watching on Peacock, I've got to bring down the cone of silence there.
There you go.
But Todd, then
I got ones that said he's hilarious. More Friday.
That's it.
We should do a Todd Fritz football podcast. And it would be all just going game by game and all of how Todd wants both teams to win and lose. That'd be fair. I would listen to that.
No, I wouldn't. I would not. Todd, could you give us some Monday night theme music as we go to break here?
It's the game of the week and it's coming your way. It's Monday night football and it's time to play. Bring on the game now. Dun, 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 dun.
20 after the hour, Pat Forty will join us. Is the Pac-12 going to play football this year?
Are you ready for some football?
Back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Football's back, and it's time to turn your game day snacks into championship contenders with that Traeger grill. It's 6-in-1 versatility. That 6-in-1 versatility means you could do grilling, smoke, bake, roast, braise, barbecue on one grill. 6-in-1 versatility. You got the game day classics. You can do wings and burgers, nachos. How about wild cards? You can do smoked beef jerky. You can do great dips on there. Wood-fired cocktails, which I love. Traeger, the grills are fueled by all-natural hardwood pellets. There's no charcoal. There's no gas there. It is delicious wood-fired flavor. Keeps all the moisture in. They've got recipes there. You can also use the Wi-Fi app where you don't even have to be out by your grill and you can still control it. Game day festivities, let Traeger help you. Every week they're serving up new game day dishes and you can download those. They have over 1,000 recipes and you can win exclusive Traeger prizes, hosting special live shows and more, getting you fired up for the football season. Visit a Traeger dealer near you or head to TraegerGrills.com/DP show today. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Man, I'm pumped up. Got U.S. Open underway. By the way, I played Wingfoot, and just the first green itself almost made me want to stop playing. It'll bring you to tears. I don't know what it's going to be. Probably +5, +6, maybe +7 wins the U.S. Open. They're going to actually have to make that course a little friendlier, because there's probably going to be a lot of complaints going on with just how tough that course is. And that clubhouse is, I would go back just to go to the clubhouse again. It's spectacular. It's a Tillinghast course, and I love Tillinghast designs, but the U.S. Open is underway. Get ready to hear the rough. Oh, what about the rough at the U.S. Open? We'll keep an eye on that coming up. We got football tonight. You got basketball, Heat Celtics game 2. Big Ten is back. Mountain West pushing for a fall schedule. Maybe the Pac-12 is coming back as well. This guy would have all the answers. Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated, senior writer. Pat, thanks for joining us. Let me start with the Big Ten. What changed in the last, month, 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of things, Dan. I mean, you start with the tangible advances in rapid testing and everything that could do for you. And I think that really quite ironically, the Pac-12 commissioner, Larry Scott, when he announced that the Pac-12 had an agreement with Quidel for rapid daily testing, all of a sudden the Big Ten's like, hey, we'll go get that and we'll do it faster. And I think that was the big thing. But there's no doubt that watching everyone else play football and hearing the outcry that was associated with that, watching the NFL, watching other college teams, watching high school teams play, and everybody saying, why aren't we playing? That I think that just kind of wore down the resistances of the Big Ten presidents.
What could go wrong here?
Well, plenty. For one thing, there is a gap between when rapid daily testing is supposed to start and when practice is ramping up, at least 2 weeks here. So you may see a higher degree of positives there. However, they are not starting games until October 23rd, 24th. So there is a gap there, a bit of a cushion there where those people, if you do have spikes, could be okay by the time they start kickoff. But just in general, I think you're going to be looking at a little bit of campus unrest in some of these places where they're like, hey, we're going to these incredible efforts for the football players. What about the regular students? What are we doing for them in terms of testing and safety for them?
I know it was announced that it was a unanimous vote. I would love to get the backstory. I'm trying to get the backstory of how much arm twisting went on, because I was told Rutgers and Northwestern were not, they went kicking and screaming. And I'm sure there's probably a couple other schools here.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that there were probably at least 3, 4, maybe even 5 schools that were not on board. Rutgers, the most obvious. I mean, the president came out all of a week earlier and said, basically, what are we doing here? Northwestern, their president deserves an Academy Award if he was not on board, because what he had to say on the conference call yesterday was basically that, yes, I'm okay with all of this. And in the background, he's probably rolling his eyes significantly.
Well, now what's this mean for the Pac-12? They're on the clock.
Sure are. And it's amazing, though, boy. I mean, once a domino falls, everybody else starts getting in position to make the next domino fall. Pac-12 presidents meeting on Friday, I think, to see if they can get a consensus to go ahead and move forward with formalized practices, getting the politicians in California and in Oregon, the states that have been the most restricted, to lift some of the restrictions and allow 11-on-11 practices. Yeah, that came yesterday. That was big. And so now you try to get the whole league on board. And, the last I heard, they're trying to shoot for a Halloween kickoff and see how many games they can get in.
And you got the Mountain West. What are the odds that the Mountain West comes back, but the Pac-12 does not come back?
I don't think that'll happen. I think that those two will probably both do the same thing. A lot of schools in the same states there. The California schools are up against it as well in the Mountain West. And, the one other factor here, those wildfires have made life very difficult out there. You know, I've got a daughter swimming at Stanford. They haven't been able to get in the pool for a week because of the air quality. You're not going to be able to practice football for well, the air quality's like that either. So there's a lot of other considerations that still have to go into this.
What did you make of Ed Orgeron, LSU head coach, saying basically all my players have, you know, tested positive?
Yeah. That was Coach O being perhaps more forthright and less intelligent than he should be on both instances. I don't think there's any doubt that there are coaches out there that have that mentality of like, let's just get our own little herd immunity and go for it. But from a public health standpoint, I mean, if you're like the public health officials in Baton Rouge, you got to be just banging your head against the wall saying, what is this guy doing?
As far as on the field here, is Clemson by far and away the team to watch out for?
That we've seen play so far, yeah, I think so. I was at Notre Dame's game against Duke, and, I mean, they were okay. It was first game again. Yeah, it's going to take a while to really figure out who's got what because it's been such a ridiculous offseason. But on paper, and I think from what they showed for three quarters on Saturday, Clemson definitely is the team. Now we'll see starting October 23rd, 24th what Ohio State looks like. Before that, on September 26th, we'll start seeing what Alabama looks like, Georgia looks like, but Clemson right now, yes.
Yeah, and I'm also wondering about this, if you're playing less games, and I was told by a source that Ohio State is hoping to pass the sight test, that the voters are going to look and go, you know, they didn't play as many games, but they look like they're a Final Four team. I think that's the hope for the Big Ten, that Ohio State, if they're the ones that get in.
Absolutely. This is going to be the most subjective college football playoff committee rankings ever because you're going to have exactly that. You're going to have people's – I mean, think about this. When Ohio State finally kicks off, Alabama will have played like four or five games. Clemson will have played like seven or six. I mean, you're going to be trying to look at those teams and say and compare this team over here and decide who should be ahead of whom. It's going to be the most controversial, the most messy, and the most subjective playoff rankings ever.
Give me the team that could crash the party.
Boy, you know, I like Oklahoma State from that standpoint. They have a ton of talent. Mike Gundy was completely off his rocker in the offseason, but if he hasn't lost his locker room, they've got the number one returning rusher in the country, Chuba Hubbard, a 2,000-yard guy. They've got a great receiver, Tylan Wallace, who missed most of last year with a knee injury. They've got a returning quarterback with experience, and they've got 10 starters back on defense. I think they could challenge Oklahoma, and if they, you know, the winner of the Big 12 figures to probably get a spot, depending what happens in these other leagues.
I don't know how many times you saw Lamar Jackson play. You're in Louisville, but you know we there were concerns with Teddy Bridgewater, and then there were concerns with Lamar Jackson. How surprised are you with Lamar Jackson's success?
Yes and no. I mean, you want to talk about intangibles. That guy, a leader, a team first guy, fearless, tough, dedicated. He had all of those. And then you add the athleticism. It's just, you know, outrageous. I mean, that level of athlete that even in the NFL is rare. I was not sure he had necessarily command of the offense, pocket passing, but he's shown that excellently so far. So I'm really happy for him to see it because this is a great guy and a great team leader. So what he's doing has been outstanding.
Yeah, it's a great story as well. Are you off to any place this weekend?
I'm not. The schedule's lousy, so I will be watching from home and monitoring all developments.
All right. Well, thank you, Pat, as always. Great stuff throughout this whole process there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dan.
That's Pat Forte. By the way, turned 56 yesterday. Happy birthday, Pat. Happy birthday. Wow. Yeah, happy birthday. All right, we'll come up with a poll question here. McLovin, what are you going to settle on?
Okay, if you don't want to do the who did we bury too soon, how about this New York-related question? And it sounds like you don't want to do all New York football because New York football is terrible, but you could trade for one of these two New York-related players, Saquon Barkley or Odell Beckham Jr. Who would you want?
I would like to see Saquon Barkley behind a decent offensive line. And you know what? I was all in on Saquon Barkley going to the Giants because I thought he might be the missing ingredient for that team. They built up their defense, and you had Eli, and I thought that they were going to be able to use him out of the backfield as well, and I thought that they were going to be a Super Bowl contender. And obviously that defense was horrible. And Saquon's first year, he was great. But I don't want Odell Beckham Jr. That's too much of a question mark there. So I would take Saquon Barkley. What else, McLovin?
Would you put Le'Veon Bell even on that
no,
list?
No, I don't want Le'Veon Bell.
Okay, golf question. Would you be okay with the winner of the U.S. Open being over par?
I'm expecting it. I'm expecting it by a considerable amount of being over par. So, and everybody else should get ready for that as well, because it's probably not going to be pretty. I don't like to watch golfers struggle. I like them to have shots and be rewarded for great shots, because I can go out and watch my friends struggle. But when I'm watching great players on a great golf course, I like to see the risk and the reward, but I don't want to see somebody penalized where you hit a shot and you go, that's going to roll off the green. And that happens at Pinehurst number 2. That'll happen at Wingfoot. There's certain course, Oakmont. I played Oakmont. I mean, I think I'd rather sat down and had lunch with my mother-in-law than to play Oakmont.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yes, I see.
What'd you say before? You don't want to see them put in a torture chamber?
Yes. I mean, that's it'll make you cry because you're going, you got to be kidding me. First green, Wingfoot. I hit a great shot and it rolled off the green. Like I'm going, how close am I? And my caddy goes, you're off the green. I go, what? No. I'm the one on the green. Nope, rolled right off. That is a slugfest on that golf course. It's one of those that looks so disarming because it's so beautiful. But when you get out there, and the first time I went there was when Fuzzy Zeller and Greg Norman had their showdown and then their one-day playoff. That was the first time I went there and got a chance to play it. I'm not anxious to play it again anytime soon. And I haven't played it in probably 15 years. It's going to take a little while for me to go back. We didn't have a good relationship. It's one of those blind dates where you go, I don't think this went well. Yes, Paulie.
But do you think courses like Oakmont and Wingfoot, the greenskeepers and the pro say, you know what, we're going to make a name for ourselves. We get the Open every decade, and we're going to be talked about for a long time. And people will always remember our course for being so hard. We'll take some criticism, but we'll be legendary. And people will come here wanting to join, wanting to play. We'll make our name for ourselves in 4 days. I think that's what they think, whether it's right or wrong.
Well, the U.S. Open's always difficult. It doesn't matter where it is. They make it difficult. And I understand that. You know, you don't want it to be 19 under. But if I'm a golfer and I see the pros struggling, I don't go, can't wait to go play there. That's why Pebble is so great. You can have a bad round, but you can't have a bad day because it's just beautiful. Each of the last 21 U.S. Open champions were within 6 shots of the lead after the opening round. So just something to keep in mind. But Wingfoot, you know, it's going to be difficult. Only one major championship venue has played tougher since 2000, and that's Oakmont in 2007. So it'll be a difficult, you know, it's just survival. That's all it is, survival of the fittest. All right, we'll take a break. Phone calls are welcome, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle at dpshow. A former Super Bowl-winning quarterback had some, well, at least a logical explanation why the Green Bay Packers drafted Jordan Love. We'll have that for you after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Oh, my God.
The play. The play's called play. Of the day.
Let's go!
Check this out.
Swung on and hit in the air to right. And that ball is gone into the right field seats. Over the auxiliary scoreboard, the third home run of the game for Higashioka, the home run stroker. And getting Higgy with it. And the Yankees now take a 13-1 lead.
The stroker. I like it. Courtesy of John Sterling on WFAN, the Yankees hit 7 total home runs last night, beating the Blue Jays 13-2. They scored 20 runs against Toronto Tuesday, 13 runs last night. Here come the Yankees. They had been on losing 17 of 20, I think, stretch, and now coming back. getting ready for the postseason. That's the play of the day. Play of the day brought to you by LegalZoom. During these unprecedented times, you can rely on LegalZoom for all the legal help you need. Visit LegalZoom.com today. Take care of the things you need to get done without having to leave your home. That's LegalZoom.com. Rob in Connecticut joins us. Hey, Rob, what's on your mind today?
I just wanted to answer Paul's question. Hey, Paul, it's your neighbor, Rob. USGA actually has a group of agronomists who work with the superintendents leading up to the events. I work in the industry, and I've actually sat in on seminars on tournament prep for very large events in the Northeast. And basically, it's the USGA who tells the superintendent what to do, and it's based on the course conditions, what the course is known for. They try to accentuate it, but I can say that the USGA tends to punish the players far more than PGA Tour events, where they're a little less about beating up on the guys playing the game.
Well, thank you, Rob. Yes, Paul.
Yeah, that's my neighbor, Rob. He's a groundskeeping guy. He supplies groundskeepers. Also, great beer guy. Brings a lot of beer to parties.
Oh, well, that's good. Maybe Rob can join us here in the man cave when we have safer conditions.
He brings good beer.
Yeah, it's they make it tough, and for a reason. Like, it's our championship, and you got to earn it. Got to work hard to win the U.S. Open. All right, I mentioned a Super Bowl-winning quarterback had an interesting take on why the Packers went after Jordan Love, traded up to get Jordan Love. Trent Dilfer, the former NFL quarterback, of course, won the Super Bowl with the Ravens. He was on with Ryan Russillo with the Ryan Russillo podcast and had this to say about the Packers upsetting Aaron Rodgers.
You want to get the most out of Aaron Rodgers, piss him off. Don't pour sugar on him. I mean, he's a guy where you have to be a psychologist. And I think the Love drafting, I think how you coach him, I think it's all very strategic. I would have done the same thing, and people would have hated me and blah, 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 blah. I'll do the same thing to my players I coach. If I think I can do something to get greatness out of somebody, I'm going to do it. And I think that's exactly what the Packers did.
Well, let's see how Aaron Rodgers plays this entire season. Because did it work if he doesn't play well, or the Packers didn't play well or don't play well? And then what do you do? So you went... If you want to draft Jordan Love, okay. But you traded up to get Jordan Love. So now Aaron Rodgers wants to prove you wrong? Like he wasn't motivated? And I've been around Rodgers, and he is quirky in his personality. And maybe he has a chip on his shoulder, or he has a chip back on his shoulder. I don't know. But that seems like a stretch to go, boy, how do we motivate Aaron Rodgers? How do we motivate him? You know what? Let's draft Jordan Love. Yeah, that'll do it. And you know what? We're going to trade up to get him, to let him know we really want him. Okay. What if Jordan Love isn't any good? What if he isn't ready to go in a couple of years? I think you flirt with you're flirting with danger there, where Rodgers may just go, hey, you got your guy, you know, I'll go play for somebody else. Good luck with Jordan Love. But you're going to trade up to get him? Why not help Aaron? You know what would motivate Aaron Rodgers? How about drafting a wide receiver in the first round for him? That might help. You know what? We're going to motivate him. We're going to draft Jordan Love. Yeah, McLeod.
Well, you did the same thing here. You brought on Ethan to push me. Everyone saw that.
But you didn't get any better.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, it doesn't always work. That might be a lesson for the Packers. Yeah.
I'm waiting for Trent Dilfer to say, you know, I watched the Dan Patrick Show, and, you know, they brought in Ethan, and I would have done it too, because you got to motivate McLovin. Yes, Paul.
It's risky, but the upside for the Packers is also gigantic. If somehow they get a Super Bowl out of Aaron Rodgers before he wraps it up, and they hand off to a very good Jordan Love, that it's going to be one of the great draft picks in history, similar to the Favre-Rodgers draft pick. Now, that's the peak. That's the best it can go. It's possible.
But do you believe that Aaron Rodgers is motivated now because they drafted Jordan Love, whereas he wouldn't have been motivated coming into this season?
I don't know if it makes you play differently, but it maybe makes you play angry.
Is he? But I don't want you playing angry.
But with a guy like him, it may work. He's a very casual, laid-back, chill guy. You see him during the game. He's joking around with the refs and having fun. I don't know if he throws passes any tighter now.
Just, and but, I don't, like, is he more aggressive? Like, I don't want him being different.
Some people need an enemy. Some people need a foil, almost like a Howard Stern back in the day or something. And if Aaron Rodgers is somehow more motivated because of,
but is he putting in more time? Is he watching more film?
At the facility.
Of course he is. Did he make his arms stronger? Like what exactly happened that Aaron Rodgers went in and said, oh, okay, now I'm going to show you. He still has the same receivers that we keep saying, boy, he needs help. And then you didn't give him any help. You drafted running backs again. Yeah, see.
But there is something to motivation. You know, I mean, like, it's not like everybody shows up every day dialed to 100%. Sometimes you need that extra, you know, fire lit under you, right?
But what do you do differently? Like, what does Aaron Rodgers do differently because they drafted Jordan Love? I'm curious about that. He's motivated. He's motivated, I think, to win anyway, but he still has the same wide receivers. He can't change that. Yes, Paulie.
I think it's hard to quantify like what it, but I think you're that way. I think sometimes once in a while on this show, there'll be like a, someone will jab you and you'll wake up and you walk in here and you're quiet and all of a sudden you'll unleash it on somebody. And that's some of the best radio.
Yeah, but I don't know.
You don't need it.
I don't know if it makes me better.
It can laser you focus on a topic.
Yeah, but then that might not be the smartest thing to do.
No. But I've seen a couple of people go down hard when they took shots, well, and it's good radio.
Yes, and Colin Cowherd.
I didn't mention names.
No, we're good. We moved on. We moved on. We're good. You know, lessons were learned. We moved on from that. Yes, McLevin.
You know, it's funny, too. Davante Adams is now, like, the best receiver. Like, all of a sudden, we didn't realize how good that receiving core was. What if they don't play well this week, by the way? Is that all?
I don't know. Aaron Rodgers is motivated, so he should be great all season long, I guess. Or how long does this motivate you?
Well, they host the Lions this week, so he should be motivated this week. He should do well.
I don't even know if he has to be that motivated against the Lions. But I'm curious how long the motivation lasts. Yes,
they were 13-3 last year. I feel like people talk about it like they were such a disaster last year.
I thought they were a 10-6 team.
Okay.
That ended 13-3. Yes. Because then we saw them against San Francisco, and you went, wow, there's a big difference between the Niners and Packers here. I thought that was a faux 13-3. They were more like a 10-6 team. Now, was Aaron Rodgers motivated last year? Because they went 13-3.
Well, didn't LaFleur cut his knees off? I mean, he has so much less passing.
What, same coach there?
Yeah, I know.
Same philosophy there. They drafted another running back. They drafted a fullback. Oh, motivated. All right, 1 hour in the books, two more to go. I got a surprise for you in the final hour. Go get all your baseball, football, trading cards, your Pokemon cards. I'm going to talk to you about how valuable they are. Back after this.